Power Records presents...
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Power Records Podcast, where the action comes alive. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I am one of your hosts, Rob Kelly, and joining me as always is...
Chris Franklin.
Chris, we're back after a really long time.
A really long stretch, you might say.
Ooh, well done. yes, if you saw the notes, the show notes, everybody, we're here to talk about the Plastic Man and Metamorpho Power Record Adventures. How we have not gotten to these yet, I don't know. After 29 episodes, we didn't. In fact, I was so sure that we had done these that I always ruled them out when Chris and I would come up with a list. I was like, well, and then I don't know. I scrolled through and I'm like, okay, it's not. No. All right. Kojak. No. All right. God, I'm kind of going far back here. Episode one. What? So it's insane that we haven't done these because these are super fun. And of course, if we're talking Plastic Man, we are contractually obligated and morally obligated to have fellow network all-star Max Romero here with us. Hi, Max.
Hey, guys. I am in great shape for the shape I'm in.
Oh, man. I can't wait to talk about these theme songs. They are such killer earworms.
Oh, you mean that theme song that's been in my head all day? Yeah.
It's been in my head my whole life at this point. But before we get to that, we have to thank our sponsor. This episode of the Power Records Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Chris, what do you got?
I've got Comics Admin graphic novel by Stephen Brower. It says, comics in modern American advertising exploded into the public consciousness at much the same time in the early 20th century. Collected now for the first time, the comics, cartoons, and illustrations from the other career of comics creators, Jack Davis, Al Capp, John Romita, Mort Meskin, Ross Andrew, Sheldon Moldoff, Neil Adams, and that's why I picked it, Noel Sickles, Stan Drake, Joe Simon, Basil Wolverton, Dick Brown, Clifford McBride, Hank Ketchum, Lou Fine, and Daniel Close. And the in-stock price trade is $21.25. And since Neil Adams did the Power Records sleeve for this one, I thought, hey, this is him doing superheroes, but also doing advertising. So this is a nice book. And it sounds really interesting. So.
It sure does. I've never even heard of that. What a lineup of creators. That's super cool. I actually have to check that out. I never heard of it. I'm picking The Terrifics, it is The Terrifics. The Terrifics, Volume 3, The God Game, which reprints Terrifics number, The Terrifics. I keep saying the numbers 15 through 18 and Annual number 1. And of course, among the members of this team are both Plastic Man and Metamorpho. It's written by Gene Luen Yang and other writers, drawn by Steven Segovia and other artists. And then the cover is by Evan Shaner. It's 144 pages in stock. Normal price is $16.99. In stock trades price is $9.85. You save 42% off. So for these, all your trade paperback needs, visit instocktrades.com. And we thank them for their support. Okay. So yeah, as I mentioned, we're here to do Plastic Man and Metamorpho. So we're going to get right to it with this Plastic Man adventure called The Invasion of the Plastic Men.
Plastic Man! Plastic Man! Plastic Man! He's a real good guy in a bright red suit, and he always wears goggles and a belt that's a beaut. He was a crook, but he reformed, and then he reformed and reformed and reformed again. Plastic Man! Plastic Man, the one, the original Elastic Man, always in great shape for the shape he's in, the fantastic Plastic Man. Plastic Man. Plastic Man. He can stretch his neck tree top high,
stretch his arms till they touch the sky, and stretch his legs till he's so tall he could bounce the moon like a basketball. Plastic Man, Plastic Man, the one, the original Elastic Man, always in great shape for the shape he's in, the fantastic Plastic Man, Plastic Man, Plastic Man. He's a quick change artist beyond compare, no one else like him, yeah, anywhere. And he's one guy the villains just can't catch, you can count on him to win in the stretch. Plastic Man, the one, the original Elastic Man, always in great shape for the shape he's in, the fantastic Plastic Man, Plastic Man.
Henry, it's just terrible.
What's terrible, my dear?
The papers these days are full of nothing but crime and violence. What is this country coming to, anyway?
Now, don't you fret your little head about it, Mary. The police are handling things quite well.
Quite well, indeed. Here's the story of another robbery committed by that awful Plastic Man.
Plastic Man again, eh?
What a shame, Henry. Plastics in the hands of a great doctor like you can be so wonderful. You make plastic hearts, plastic arms, everything to help people live healthier, happier lives.
That's a doctor's duty, my love.
But that wicked Plastic Man, he makes the word plastic sound, well...
While this conversation was taking place on the east side of town, over at police headquarters on the west side...
What a way to begin the day. Look at these newspapers. Every one of them screaming for our scalps unless we do something.
Yeah, I know. Plastic Man.
He sure is a disappointment to me. You know, I could have sworn he was on the straight and narrow, but all these jobs he's pulling...
The thing that's bugging me is how can one man be in so many places at once?
Now, what do you mean?
Look at this map. Now, we know there was a job here and here and here and over here.
So?
Now, look at the time of the crimes. They all happen about the same time.
And witnesses positively identify Plastic Man as a criminal in every one of these cases. Hey, yeah, what gives?
That's what I've been thinking. What gives?
Plastic Man, you've got a nerve showing up here. You're under arrest.
Hold it, Smitty, old buddy, old pal. Do you think I'd be stupid enough to walk in here like this if I were really back in the old racket again?
Well,
Well, that's better, Captain. Now, I figure some clown's been sending his gang out on jobs dressed up like me. Red suit, goggles, and all.
Why the masquerade?
To discredit me, make me look bad. He knows I've been the number one criminal catcher in the whole country since I reformed.
But if he sends out a bunch of these characters at the same time, he's overplaying his hand. Now, you can't be everywhere at once.
As far as the police are concerned, but that guy's gone to a lot of trouble to get me in trouble, and I got a feeling my troubles won't be over till we get him behind bars.
Well, you got any ideas?
Yeah, listen. This Jasper seems to have a taste for culture and all that jazz. Notice how the gang's been grabbing off priceless jewels and paintings at the homes of private collectors? I got a hunch they're gonna go after something real big, like at the museum.
Okay, I'll put a stakeout around the place.
No, I got a better idea. Plant a phony story in today's paper that the Hope Diamond is on display at the museum. I'll make myself into the display case in which the fake diamond will be placed.
And when one of those fake plastic men reaches for the fake diamond...
There won't be anything fake about the surprise he's going to get. And remember, get that story in.
And now, late at night, inside the museum...
Boy, I could think of more cheerful places to spend my nights than inside this gloomy old place disguised as a display case. Two a.m. Nothing yet. Plastic Man, old boy. Looks like your plan didn't work. Well, I'll be glad to get out of it. Wait. Somebody's coming. Yeah, there he is. Holy mackerel. He looks just like me. Plastic Man. He's coming closer. Closer. Now when he opens the front panel of this display case to grab the diamond, I'm gonna grab him and change back to my real form. Like so! Gotcha, you phony!
Dr. Steel, Dr. Steel, Mayday!
Ye gods, it's a robot! A robot Plastic Man!
Mayday, Mayday, Dr. Steel!
Oh boy, here comes more trouble. Four more, just like that one. Coming right at me!
Destroy Plastic Man! Destroy! 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 Destroy!
I gave him a chance. But I'm changing myself into a strong rope, and now to tie all five of them up into one nice tight package. Got him! Well, now what? All that's coming from out of them. It's a directional signal. And we're moving, like a robot plane. We're heading for the east side of town, right for that house. The sign reads, Dr. Henry Steele. And we're going right in. Why, it's a laboratory. And that gentle-looking little guy, can he be behind all this? Fools! Fools! You were ordered to destroy Plastic Man, and you have failed. And so have you, Doctor. Plastic Man in the form of a rope! All the better to tie you up with, my good doctor. For the rest of your little friends, like this. Let me go! Let me go, I say! Of course, Doctor, of course. When the police arrive. The police? They've been following me every minute, hoping your fake Plastic Man would lead us to you. And here they come.
Okay, okay, don't move. Nobody.
They couldn't move if they wanted to. Put the cuffs on them all, Sergeant. That's it. And now back to my own self.
Well, I'll be switched.
What I don't understand, Doctor, is why a great surgeon like you would get involved in a mess like this.
I'm the greatest creator of all. I created hearts of plastic, arms and legs of plastic, whole men of plastic.
Then why did you want me, the real Plastic Man, destroyed?
I was going to create a whole army of Plastic Men and rule the world. You were the only one who could stop the invasion of the Plastic Men.
Henry, Henry, what are all these people doing here? And what are you doing with those silly handcuffs on?
I'm afraid it's a long story, ma'am.
The Plastic Men are coming. And I, Henry Steele, shall rule the world.
Henry, oh my goodness.
You'll see, the Plastic Men are coming. They're coming.
Plastic Man!
And that is the invasion of the Plastic Men. So, Max, what is your history with this power record? Does it predate your love of Plastic Man? Is it coincide with it? What's the story?
Okay, so I am going to blame all this on you, Rob, actually.
Ooh,
because
okay.
I did not listen to Power Records growing up. I think I kind of knew about them as a cultural thing, you know, that I knew that there were records about superheroes out there, but I never had any myself, and I didn't start looking for them until I met you, and you would talk about Power Records. So I actually didn't start seeking them out or had even heard any of them until after that. So it's very, very recent. Maybe like within the last, 10, 15 years? What I have the LP that the JLA LP, mm-hmm. That has these two stories, Plastic Man, Metamorpho, but it also has Aquaman, or as they say, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and
The Flash.
And The Flash. So, but from what I understand, these are the same stories that are on the 45.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that is, you know, my history with Power Records is very, very recent. I did, my dad was a, he got into broadcasting, right when I was like a kid, and he did it while he was in the Air Force. And so he had a bunch of records that I kind of stole And some of those were called, what, tail spinners, I think. And those were retellings of Snow White and Robinson Crusoe and things like that. So I knew about the concept. But the first thing I ever heard that was similar to this was a dramatization, I guess, of Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart when I was in elementary school. They played it for us for Halloween. And that kind of just blew my mind. And so I've always been interested in this, in these sort of recordings. And to find out that there were dramatizations about, you know, some of my favorite superheroes and comics, and, you know, it was just mind blowing to me. You know, I love this stuff and I love revisiting it.
Did you have any sort of children's records before that? Like when you were a little kid, or was that just not something you really, not in your life?
I think I had some Disney records when I was very young. I know I had I had a Mickey Mouse radio that was like a little cabinet, and it had little doors that opened and everything. And like I said, I had these tail spinner records. I also had an Alfred Hitchcock Presents Scary Ghost Stories, something like that.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, and my it's narrated by him with interstitials with Alfred Hitchcock, and my dad used to play that for us every Halloween, and he would close the blinds and turn off the lights, and we would, because at the beginning of the record it says listen, you can hear them slithering through the keyhole, and then you hear this kind of noise, and it was when you're a kid that was thrilling, and I still listen to it every Halloween. So, yeah, I mean, I did have records that I would listen to, but nothing like what Power Records was putting out.
You unlocked the memory, Max. I think I heard that same Telltale Heart record in school. I think we listened to it, and I remember sitting in the school library, and they had like a little section that they had. They had record players and headphones you could plug in and listen to records, but I remember that we listened to that in class around Halloween too. So that just totally, like, I think that's the first time I ever heard, or, you know, before I read any Edgar Allan Poe, it's the first time I heard a Poe story. So yeah,
it was the same thing for me. Yeah. And that was a lifelong love now for Edgar Allan Poe and for these kinds of recordings. I mean, that led to listening to The Shadow, listening to War of the Worlds, you know, all those very famous recordings from, you know, the 30s and all that, because it's a great art form, you know, and I think you see that kind of coming back with, or it has been coming back with, you know, with podcasts, with dramatic podcasts.
Mm-hmm. I must have had a really square bunch of teachers. We never listened to a single record in school. That never happened. So let alone anything as cool as like an Alfred Hitchcock record or anything like that, you know, like or the Telltale Heart, like, no way. So okay, well, I'm dying to find out what you think of this as a resident Plastic Man expert. But Chris, can you provide for everybody a little bit of history of this? Because obviously, for those of you that have been following along on the show, you're kind of, it might be a little confusing. Why does this adventure open with a theme song? this is not something Power Records did. But it's also an amazing earworm. It is a great theme, but it's unusual. They didn't do that for Batman. They didn't do that for Superman. They didn't do that. You know, the Power Records didn't have a Conan theme. Oh boy, if they only had. So can you explain to everybody how Power Records ended up producing even a Plastic Man Metamorpho adventure?
Sure. I think we brought up in the past that Power Records, Peter Pan Records, I think it morphed from several different record labels that had previously existed, and it morphed into other ones after the heyday of Power Records. And one of those previous iterations that was at least partially associated with Power Records was Tipton Records. And they released in 1966, in the midst of all the Batmania and superhero mania, an album called Songs and Stories of the Justice League of America. And they had theme songs and stories for Flash, Wonder Woman, Plastic Man, Metamorpho, and Aquaman. Now, when Power Records re-released it, they stripped away a few of the theme songs. I think Metamorpho and Plastic Man were the only ones that got to keep their theme songs, as I recall. Yep. And I've got the album too, but mine's actually still in the shrink wrap, so I've never opened it. So I just keep it in the shrink wrap because I can just listen to it, you know, online now. But the reason those particular characters were picked for that album is really interesting because, you know, the Filmation shows were running. They already had the Superman animated series that basically, well, put Filmation in business because they basically lied to national periodical publications that they were a real production unit and got the Superman license. So they were running Superman with Superboy. And there was an ad in 1966 that promised Aquaman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, Plastic Man, and Metamorpho, sounds familiar, in colorful animation coming in the fall of 66. But that never happened. Instead, we got Aquaman, who became a co-headliner with Superman, and a few little interstitials with The Flash and Green Lantern, Atom, Hawkman, and the Teen Titans, and then the assembled Justice League. But Plastic Man, Metamorpho, and Wonder Woman didn't make the cut. But apparently Tifton made this album thinking, oh, they're going to be TV stars. So let's create some audio adventures featuring these characters that are soon going to be on TV every week. So
that is, and it's so funny. I remember that ad and you sent it to us right in preparation for this episode. And I remember it running on the inside back covers of some old Justice Leagues. And it's one of those things where in a pre-internet era, I remembered I was trying to find it again. And I was like, did I imagine that? Right. Cause I can't find it again. You know, I was like, what comic had that ad? But I was like, I swear to God, I don't remember. And it's kind of funny. Filmation, they really wanted to dip their toe pretty far into the DC pool because there is that still that exists, a single frame of a sample cartoon they were going to do for the Blackhawks. It's the Blackhawks like beating up an alien. All the Filmations are just beating up aliens pretty much all the time. But like, imagine like, how cool would that have been? I mean, I guess we don't have to imagine what a Plastic Man cartoon would look like. We know what it looks like. And, right. You know, post Brave and the Bold and post JLU, they've been in animation a bunch of times. But man, how cool would it have been to have gotten a Plastic Man and Metamorpho shorts by Filmation in the 60s? And that also says something really amazing about the fact that Plastic Man was included doesn't surprise me because he had an average higher pop culture quotient, you know, than other characters. But Metamorpho was what, a year old at that point? Yeah. Like they were really DC must have been really bullish on Metamorpho that they were
my understanding with Metamorpho was the early sales numbers indicated that he was extremely popular.
Wow.
And then they just started overprinting his comics and they didn't sell through, and that's why the series didn't last too long. But he was pretty popular, but I don't think he was quite as popular. But actually, off that Tifton record, they did several singles that had like die cut sleeves, and there was a similar Batman record. And there's a Metamorpho die cut, sleeve with him like he's becoming a rocket and flying away from the Earth. I don't think they did a Plastic Man as a single though.
I've never seen it. Yeah.
I've seen he's the only one that didn't, which sucks, but he didn't get one, which I'm sorry, Max. But just imagine, guys, if those characters had been on Filmation, almost guarantee, of course, Plastic Man did show up on the Super Friends in season one, but it makes you wonder if they wouldn't have brought him back for the all new Super Friends hour and then into the challenge of the Super Friends, because whatever Filmation did, Hanna-Barbera picked those characters back up. So except for the Teen Titans. So.
Oh, it would have been so cool. But yeah, I had the Power Record version, the Justice League of America one. And it has the Justice League. It has them doing the musical number, which is amazing. Are you ready? Yeah. Are you with it? Yeah.
Call the roll.
And Batman's like, yeah, like, you know, and Plastic Man and Metamorpho are part of the Justice League. And I remember just being like, why are they here? Like, not that I love those characters, but I'm like, why are they here? And then I remember thinking, why are there theme songs? Right? Like, what? Like, again, they're really catchy, but why are these things here? But now we know that, yes, they were just lifted from this Tifton record and repurposed. And it's a shame that Power Records never decided to do their own versions of these adventures, because these are really fun. So, okay. Now we have sort of the history of this. Chris, did you have the JLA or the Tifton record or the Plastic Man Metamorpho 45 as a kid?
I did not have any of those as a kid, unfortunately. I think I've found out about them somewhere, you know, along the lines, maybe before your Power Records blog, I'm pretty sure. But, and I actually, you know, I've got the single, I think I got the single with the Plastic Man Metamorpho at an antique mall, like back in, well, yeah, I had to, because that was like back in like the early 2000s, maybe late 90s. So I knew about it then, and I've, you know, of course got to listen to them several times online, and I've got the, like I said, I've got the album now too, and it's in the shrink wrap, but it's got the little corner cut off of it, which, you know, they do with albums to, you know, when they were discounting them or whatever. But yeah, I wish I'd had them when I was a kid, because I was a big fan of the Plastic Man, you know, the Ruby Spears Plastic Man cartoon. So I, you know, and I knew Metamorpho from Brave and the Bold team ups. So I'd been all about it. You know, he didn't have a big profile in the late 70s up until he joined the Outsiders. But, you know, I was, and of course I read Plastic Man and Super Friends and Adventure Comics. And so I'd been all about it, but no, I didn't have him as a kid.
I had this one as a kid. I had the Justice League record, as I said. And I, you know, this, we're talking 45 years ago at this point. I obviously don't remember what my first exposure to Plastic Man would have been. I know I saw him on the Super Friends cartoon, but I don't think I would have seen it in the first season when it aired live, because I would have been like a toddler. So probably the comics was probably the first time I ever saw Plastic Man, but this record would have been pretty early, right? Pretty early in my exposure to the character. And that might have cemented the reason I love him so much, is because this record is so much fun. And so this was, you know, I think as a kid, I might have had a false sense of like, Plastic Man is kind of a big deal, because like, he's got a cartoon and he's in the comics and he was on Super Friends and he has his own record. Like, you know, that's like Spider-Man levels of media saturation. So I was like, you know, I must have been like, oh yeah, Plastic Man's a really, 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 really big deal. So, okay, Max, as our resident Plastic Man expert, what is your expert opinion on this story?
Top to bottom, amazing. It is such, wow. So in all the characterizations of Plastic Man, this is so unique, and also might be one of my favorites, because it has that real almost Silver Age, early Bronze Age feel to it in terms of the adventure. I mean, he's fighting against someone called Dr. Steel, and who, you know, just has to wonderfully falls apart at the end of the story. just goes completely bonkers. And, you know, but Plastic Man is, he's witty, he's fun, but he's still heroic. And, the story is just kind of out there, and you know, it has that crazy theme song. I cannot stress how catchy that theme song is, and well written. I mean, it pretty much sums up the character so pretty well. It's great, and it's compact. I mean, it's maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes long altogether. Mm-hmm. And but it's a great little story. I love it.
I love, it's got very, you know, Chris and I have talked about this on a bunch of episodes before, like that Power Records definitely leaned into kind of, you know, not adult material, that's way overstating it, but didn't shy away from kind of creepy stuff. Mm-hmm. For what ostensibly were meant to be kids records. I mean, yes, the this whole Power Records imprint is meant to be more for older kids than their normal kiddie fare, but it's still meant to be for children. I mean, I had this record at like 6 or 7, but I love that when the villain goes insane, right? And he's just like, ah, And then there's this pause, and then it's Plastic Man. Like, they just go right to the thing. Yeah. Like, wow, okay, well.
You know, and I have the JLE record, and as I mentioned, and actually the one I have has all the songs on it, so I guess I got lucky. But the there's on the record in general. So what I notice is that every bad guy is trying to accomplish some sort of world domination.
Yeah.
And I believe there's at least one fatality and one maybe fatality. So it's a little, you know, it's not holding any hands, that's for sure.
I also I'm sorry, go ahead.
I like the fact that Truman Capote stopped by and did a voiceover on one of the robots. I like that.
That's not writing, that's typing. I really like that he was just finished off Murder by Death and he came over and recorded that while he was done. It's funny that like that they do get into like the angle that Plastic Man is thought of as a criminal. Like, they, you know what I mean? Like, they actually bothered to, whoever wrote this for the Tifton record, bothered to, like, look that up. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they actually took the angle from the character that I thought was pretty cool. I mean, he said he doesn't really act like the Plastic Man that I'm ever familiar with. But nevertheless, it's like, I love that they had that part of his characterization.
And it's interesting because that reminds me a little bit of Kyle Baker's run, because that something similar happens in the beginning, in the first part of Kyle
Baker's
run.
That's right. That's right.
And he, and it's sort of the same thing. Everyone kind of goes like, well, they're, you know, I don't think they know that he's Eli O'Brien in the Kyle Baker run yet, but no one is surprised that he's gone back to crime. And but I love the way Plastic Man handles it. He's kind of like, hey, come on, baby, it's me. And he's just very cool, you know. He's kind of not a swinging Plastic Man, but he's, you know, he sounds pretty relaxed about things in general. He's more like annoyed that someone is kind of copying his thing and blaming it on him. And I mean, it's the only thing missing would be Woozy, but everything else is there. You know, there's the captain, there's the cops, he's, you know, working with them, and, you know, his background is referenced, like you said, and actually it kind of is what drives the plot. I mean, that's what makes him even want, you know, get as involved as he does. And, you know, it's for a compact story, it's pretty well thought out.
They get a lot done in like 9 minutes.
Yeah,
I think it just popped in my head, like, who would be the perfect actor at one point to play this version of Plastic Man? Bruce Campbell.
Yeah,
just imagine some of the lines he says in this.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like, he would have made a good Plastic Man anyway, honestly. Evil Dead era, like Evil Dead 2 era Bruce Campbell, that's Plastic Man. But yeah, I like that you said, they slide into the criminal angle, which they did on Batman the Brave and the Bold, you know, which I liked. That was kind of always in the background. That, and on there, Batman had like helped rehabilitate him. Mm-hmm. It's such a nice little it really does show that, you know, he is a cool character despite everything that's going on. I like that angle. He's not sweating or anything. He's not like, freaking out about it. Or he's like, I've got this. I'm gonna take care of these guys. But I do think it's kind of odd. You know, he's such a visual character. This shouldn't work at all in audio format. You know, mm-hmm. And it really shouldn't. I mean, they describe what he turns into, but it works. You know, I mean, they actually make it work. Now, if it was a longer story, I don't know if it would work. For a prolonged, like a whole album, I don't know. I don't know if they can make that work. But you know, in this short little, you know, you take the song away, it's what, about like maybe 7 minutes or something. It actually works well, and I'm sure they did it because they thought the cartoon was coming, but they actually did somehow make a very visual character work in an audio medium.
You know, I was going to mention that because they do say like, oh, I'm going to disguise myself as a display case. And I don't know, it's just because of familiarity, but I could instantly picture what that looked like. And I'm not sure how that would work for someone who didn't know the character already. But then again, maybe these records probably weren't really geared toward people who didn't know these characters. But yeah, it still works really well. And one thing that was surprising is that for something that's so much in the audio format, there is no sound effect for his stretching.
Yeah, I
You
noticed
know,
that
you just
too, yeah.
yeah. And I thought that was a really interesting choice considering, because that would kind of add to that, but I guess it could also kind of sound, I don't know how that would work. I'm 50-50 on it. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I noticed that the one difference between the Tifton record and the Power records is that they did do sound effects. Not a lot, but they did do them. Like Superman whooshing, and things like that. And they had more interstitial music, and these don't. Like, other than the theme, it's kind of just silence. And you'll even have that in the Metamorpho record where he's like, "What if I do this?" And someone's like, "Ah!" And you're just having to imagine. There's no, yeah, there's no sound of it. Like, nobody's getting like a rubber glove and going rah, to make the sound. It's just kind of, you have to sort of imagine it. And I hadn't thought of that, Max. It's right. If you don't know Plastic Man, what he can exactly do, that he can change shape, he can't just stretch. Because if you're thinking Plastic Man, you're probably thinking, oh, he's like Mr. Fantastic. And he just stretches his arm and stuff. But he's like, yeah, I can turn into this thing. And you're like, well, what does that mean? So yeah, I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And one thing I wanted to mention really quickly was that this was a good year for Plastic Man. He was this record was released, or at least the JLA one that I have was released in 1975. That was the same year that Plastic Man 11 came out, which was the first issue with Ramona Freyden. That came out that same year. And Brave and the Bold number 123 came out in September of that year. And interestingly enough, that's the Brave and the Bold that also has Metamorpho in it.
Metamorpho, right?
Yeah. So, it was a good time for both of them.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And of course, we're doing this partially as another tribute to Ramona Freyden, because it come to mind that we hadn't done this, and she's famous for doing both characters and a co-creator of Metamorpho, so. Yeah, that was that, right. That was the other thing that we were stunned at, that we hadn't done this yet. We're like, how have we not? This is like, yeah, Ramona Freyden's on the mind, as she always is. But yeah, perks. So yeah, it's a fun adventure. I mean, as a Chris, as one of the co-experts on Power Records here on the network, where would you rank this as, like, is it, you think this is top tier Power Record? Is it mid tier Power Record? Is it, I don't think it's, I think you're gonna say it's bottom tier. No, I think it's I think it's a little bit of an interesting curio, because it does kind of have a little bit that the theme song and the lack of sound effects do kind of put it back like a decade earlier compared to what Power normally puts out. But I don't think that sticks out. That certainly a kid wouldn't pick up on that. That's just because two nerds have done a lot of listened to a lot of Power Records and podcasts about them. But I'd say it's like upper mid tier. That's where I'd put it.
Yeah, I would too. I would too. I would say like their top tier is like Conan and the Batman. Like, I think those are the ones that were like the absolute best. I did appreciate that in like on the back covers of some of the Power Records, where they would do like Neil Adams would draw that piece of all the characters that Metamorpho and Aquaman, excuse me, Aquaman, Metamorpho and Plastic Man are there. Right. And I love that. I love seeing them all together. That should have been like a cover for a DC special or something. How they never used that, I don't know, but it's great. You got them all running towards the camera and stuff. And it's just fun seeing them all together like that.
Well,
Yeah,
that
super
brings
fun.
up something that I was thinking. It's less so with the Metamorpho story with that we're going to talk about, but with this one, I would have loved to have seen this Dr. Steel come back in comics. He would be a great character with his crazy robots and, going destroy, destroy. And it's just, I think. I think there's good stuff in here. I would love to see this, come back into print somehow.
Yeah, that'd be cool if they like special like bonus the sequel to this had the record packed in, so you could be like, listen to the record first, then read this comic, or something. That'd be cool.
And Dr. Steel manages to survive, so he's out there somewhere.
Oh, man. Dr. Steele, Dr. Steele. It's creepy. It's creepy stuff. So, yeah, it's a really fun adventure. I love that Power Records did it. I just, you know, it's they did Superman and Batman and Spider-Man and Hulk so incessantly. But when they did these one-offs of Plastic Man or Captain America, it's just great, great stuff. So, all right, everybody. So next up is Metamorpho in Fumo, the Fire Giant.
Story of the Element Man.
Metamorpho, Metamorpho.
Starts out in old Egypt land.
Metamorpho, Metamorpho.
Rex Mason was his real name.
Metamorpho, Metamorpho.
A soldier of fortune didn't care about fame.
Metamorpho, Metamorpho.
Until fate took a hand in the game. What a change. Pyramid, he saw a light.
Metamorpho, Metamorpho.
It came from a glowing meteorite.
Metamorpho, Metamorpho.
Shooting cosmic rays stronger than the sun through his body and brain. And when it was done, there,
yeah,
there,
yeah,
there,
yeah, 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 there
stood the Element Man.
Metamorpho. Metamorpho, Metamorpho.
He'll change into copper, cobalt, or tin.
Metamorpho, Metamorpho.
Rearrange his molecules just like that. Become anything he'd like at the drop of a hat. Be a hero, a king, yet he'd chuck it all if he could be the one thing he just can't be. Plain Rex Mason, I know, 'cause you'll see
going on, Sheriff?
Worst fire ever seen in these here parts over in Arroyo near the border. Equipment being rushed in from every town in this county.
How'd the fire start?
I know you won't believe this, Mr. Newspaper Reporter, but witnesses swear they saw a huge man mountain of fire.
Man mountain of fire?
That's what I said, a huge monster of a man, big as a house. Only instead of being made of flesh and blood, he's made of fire.
That's hard to believe.
Well, you'd better believe it, young feller.
Hey, wait a minute. Who are you barging here like that?
I'm Simon Stagg, the inventor. You may have heard of me.
Sure have. Howdy, Mr. Stagg. What y'all doing down here?
Go on with your story, Sheriff. I'll tell you later.
Well, this here now fire thing has already burned its way through three Texas border towns, not to mention half of Mexico.
Did you say Mexico?
That's right. Folks say it all started one night down in the jungles of central Mexico when the top blew off a mountain. A shooting fire all over the place.
Hmm. Fits in. Supposedly extinct volcano suddenly erupts.
And when this here fire thing walks right out of that volcano and starts burning its way through jungles, villages, and all, folks down that way figure this is some kind of a fire god.
Fumo the fire giant.
Fumo the fire giant.
God of fire of a long-lost Inca civilization. Proof at last he really exists.
He exists, all right. But if he ever reaches Texas oil country, ba-room, we won't.
Why not soak them with water or shoot them with guns and cannons?
That's the scariest part of the whole thing. This is one fire that water won't put out. Just evaporates on contact and bullets go right through him like through a cloud and he keeps coming on.
Well, he's got to be stopped.
Now, that's a right fine idea, partner. And you just tell us how, and the governor's sure enough going to pin a medal on you. Sheriff's office. Yeah, Jim, what's up? Okay, we'll do.
What's wrong?
Your friend Fumo the Fire Giant is heading straight for this town. Now what do we do?
If there's one man who can help, it's the man coming in here right now. Rex, hurry up. Gotta talk to you.
Cool it, Sagsy. The element man is here. What's raising your temperature?
Sheriff, this is Rex Mason, known as Metamorpho, the element man. If anyone can stop him, it's the element man.
Well, you're right in time. That fire god, or whatever he is heading this way right now.
Well, what are we waiting for? Get your car, Sheriff, and let's get up a welcoming committee and get out and do a little fumigating, hey? Not bad, huh?
Look at there. From behind that hill, smoke and flame right up to the sky. And listen, do you hear what I hear?
Bow down to the mighty Fumo the Fire Giant. Bow down or be destroyed.
Look, there he is.
Good heavens, he's unbelievable.
He must be 25 feet tall.
A living, walking man of fire.
Well, here's where little old Rexy goes into action. Hey, Fumo!
Bow down, element man, or be destroyed.
Oh, so you know who I am.
Fumo is all-powerful, all-wise. Bow down or be destroyed.
You're sure a hot ticket, Fumo, old buddy, but you're too slow for this league. See how you like this cobalt fist. Went right through him like air and dissolved.
You are doomed, element man.
How about that? Didn't even phase him. Well, I know water won't affect him, but I'm making myself into a fire extinguisher, and let's see how he likes this dose of carbon dioxide.
stupid, little man. And now indeed shall Fumo destroy you.
I gotta think fast. Nothing seems to bother him. Water, carbon dioxide, guns. What makes him tick anyway?
I got it. It's a thermonuclear atomic fire.
Hydrogen carbon cycle. That's what keeps him going. And I got just the thing. I'm going to turn myself into oxygen, dive right into his fire, and blend with his hydrogen in just the right proportion, like this.
Oh, what's happening? What have you done?
It's working, just like I figured.
Look at there, Mr. Steig. I don't believe it. The fire's turning into water. It's out.
Fantastic. Fumo has dribbled down to the size of an ordinary man and is lying there unconscious or dead. Rex, my boy, you're wonderful. How'd you do it?
Two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen is H2O, otherwise known as water. Fumo supplied the hydrogen. I supplied the oxygen, QED.
Good thinking, Rex.
Fantastic, element man.
Elementary, my dear Watson.
And the element man.
Metamorpho.
The element man.
Metamorpho.
The element man.
Metamorpho.
The element man.
Metamorpho.
And that was Metamorpho in Fumo the Fire Giant. So, okay, Max, what's your view of this particular adventure?
I liked it. I think it's, especially for people who may not know the character, it's a great introduction to Metamorpho. I like the characterization. I thought the actor, who I think is probably the same actor throughout for everything, but he does a good job of capturing the spirit of Metamorpho. And it's kind of like a comic. It's kind of a one and done. I mean, you don't, you know, Fumo is defeated in the end and, you know, that's it. Everyone goes home. And it was, I liked it. It's fun.
If anything, they managed to top the Plastic Man theme. I think the Metamorpho one is even better. I think it is so catchy. First of all props to the songwriter. You try and rhyme Metamorpho in a song, And then they do the switch up where the guy singing is Metamorpho.
It's a gut punch.
God, it's Rosebud is the sled, everybody. It's just absolutely amazing. That Metamorpho. And then that keyboard solo comes in. It's just, they got Al Cooper from the Highway 61 sessions. It's absolutely fantastic. So, oh, man, I just love this thing. So, Chris, what do you feel? How do you feel about Fumo the Fire Giant?
I can't help but think in the DC universe that Metamorpho, everybody back in the 60s cut a record. Metamorpho actually cut this record within the DC universe. He was on, you know, the Hollywood Palace. You know, Adam West showed up as Batman. Metamorpho showed up and sang this song, you know. So I think that actually happened. I love this song. The fact that it says he's homely as sin, ouch. But, you know. I do think that perhaps Len Wein and John Ostrander listened to this record because Fumo's pretty much Brimstone from Legends. He's like the exact same character.
It's interesting. I was getting more like a Chemo vibe or Chemo from the Metal Men, but Chemo doesn't talk though, right? He doesn't talk. So Fumo is more like Brimstone.
He's like on fire, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I kind of got that from him, and I'm glad that Buford T. Justice is in this record too as a big fan.
I was going to ask you your opinion, as you are an expert on Southern Sheriff characters, what you thought of this guy in the adventure.
Yeah, I just wish he'd said if they cremated the son bitch, but you know he didn't.
I will say, as someone who has lived in Texas most of his life, not that far off.
And Clifton James as the sheriff at the Metamorpho story. The Plastic Man, it adheres to the comic. It's got Simon Stagg in it, which is great. Now in this, he's more like Metamorpho's sort of friend, not friend, but he's not trying to kill Metamorpho like he's always doing the thing. But I mean, they still made the effort though to like name the character Simon Stagg. They could have named him anything. They could have just been like, whatever, but they, you know, presumably had the comic and like, oh, okay, let's make him Simon Stagg. And kind of like on the you know, as a parallel to the thing about, you know, the scary ending to Plastic Man, that like these records, yes, they're aimed at children, but they really are expecting a lot of kids. You've got Metamorpho using a Latin abbreviation in this story where he goes QED. And like, they don't explain what that is. And when I was a kid, I didn't know what it meant. I only knew what it meant up until a couple of years ago.
And it's sassy. Like,
yeah. Like, they're expecting kids to like know what that is. I just think that's really, it's really impressive. And so, yeah, like,
and some simple chemistry.
Yeah. Like,
it's Julius Schwartz level science in here, you know, flashbacks, you know.
Oh, man. Like, really well done. Again, I would keep giving Power Records credit when it's not. It's the Tifton guys. But still, like, this is really, really quite impressive. Man. So, yeah, they're both really great. And it makes total sense. It's kind of funny when you think about, like, when Power Records was marketing this, right? Because they released this, as Chris mentioned earlier. This was released on the Justice League record. And then it was released as a 45, which features that great Neil Adams cover. And they're, like, intertwined, which is great. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like a nice little detail that they're kind of, you know, they're stretching and they're mixed. But like, you would think that if Power Records was trying to sell these records, they would have instead, because they did Aquaman and Flash and Metamorpho and Plastic Man. You would think, since Plastic Man and Metamorpho were probably the lesser known characters, you would have done Aquaman and Plastic Man and Flash and Metamorpho instead of kind of like doing the two obscure characters together. And I'm sure both of you mourn the fact that this was not done as a comic book, that they didn't do a Neil Adams or anyone drawn, you know, iteration of these stories. Can you imagine what that would have looked like if Neil Adams had done, you know, 18 page comic of these two stories? Oh,
mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's why I'm glad that you picked the Terrifics as your in-stock trades choice, because you get to see a lot of their interaction and the buddy cop vibe that they have, which is, you know, really great to see, you know, cause I think both of them at different points in their careers have, you know, kind of lamented how they're freaks, you know, or people that think they're freaks. And so to see two characters who are alike, but not alike, kind of buddy up is really neat. And yeah, I mean, I would have loved to have seen this and to see Neil Adams draw, you know, those just more Bronze Age artists, you know, working on these characters, you know, together. That would have been awesome. I would have loved that.
Yeah. Oh man, it would have been really, really cool. But again, I'm glad we got it the way we got it. I'm glad they did a 45 for it. It's great that it's on the Justice League record. These are always been some of my favorites of the, again, I keep saying Power Records. They're not, but you know what I mean. They're part of that imprint.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that they never did them again. Again, they probably couldn't have, they would have had to recast because they wouldn't have the same actors, but Power Records did that anyway. Probably wouldn't have made a difference. And it is, we, Chris, you and I have talked about this, and I guess it was never going to be anything they were ever going to do. But like, why didn't they do a crossover record, right? Of like Superman and Batman together, Plastic Man and Metamorpho, like get them up with like it was right there, guys.
I don't know. It's like, why didn't, Filmation never put Superman and Batman together either when they got
Yeah.
Batman? So even though they were making new Superman, it's so weird that, like, why did it take so many years to put Superman and Batman in a movie together? Let's not get into
Yep.
which movie they were in, but but still, why did it take so long? And it's like, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Why not actually have a Justice League adventure, do a new one and put it on this album,
But anyway, I'm glad it exists. It's a great little curio that there would be a record of Plastic Man and especially Metamorpho, which is kind of such a deep bench pull for the DC universe. And like I said, it's shocking that it took us this many years, this far into the show, to get to it. I don't know how that we managed to skip it, but I'm glad we finally got to it. So, Max, thank you so much for joining us to talk about these records. These are super fun.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. So, everybody, stay tuned. We're going to run some podcast promos. Chris and I are going to do some listener feedback.
Come explore the Hyborian Age and tread the jeweled thrones of Earth with me, Stephen Orr, and the Hither Came Conan podcast. Together, we'll take a look at the adventures of Conan of Cimmeria, the black-haired, Selenite barbarian, one comic book issue at a time. From the Marvel comic series that began in 1970 to the currently being published series from Titan Comics and everything in between. Get Hither Came Conan now on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
And it's time for listener feedback. And these are the comments we got on the previous episode of the Power Records podcast, which came out around 7 years ago, episode 29, where we talked about 70s TV favorites. First up is a comment from Dr. Chris Lewis, who says, "Look, guys, there are regrettably few opportunities in my particular field of medicine for bionic limb replacement, so I'm no expert. But surely the Tennessee kid who got his arm cut off in the cardboard crusher must surely be in the running for becoming the next $6 million man. In 2022, $6 million doesn't feel like it'd buy you a whole load of cybernetic enhancement. What's the equivalent cost now? $6 billion? And I'm sure I've seen babies in onesies with 'Who loves you, baby?' plastered over the chest." Oh, the records. Yeah, I'm surprised there was no Bionic Man slash Woman cartoon, but Toby was a particularly irritating, super intelligent tween sidekick. How did he get to know more about the geology of the moon than most space scientists? And if that's true, why didn't NASA hire the squeaky little twerp? That story was a big nope from me. Kojak was a much more interesting tale, but definitely seems more nuanced and adult. And I also wondered exactly what Power Records thought what the audience would be for this particular disc.
So did we.
Yeah, we thought the same thing. Travis Morgan, the Warlord, says, "Hi,
Oh,
gents."
hi, Star
That's
Terrace.
very exciting. Another great podcast. As a child of the late 60s, early 70s, we only had the three networks, PBS and maybe a UHF station. Look it up, kids. We only had Saturday morning cartoons and early afternoon cartoons or reruns. That said, Kojak was, in a weird way, kid-friendly. His catchphrase, the lollipop, and his general attitude, yelling at his boss and underlings, was much more entertaining than, say, Marcus Welby, MD. We were so starved for something a little fun that we were happy when our parents chose a show like Kojak. These are the days of family viewing, also known as we had to watch whatever mom and dad are watching because there is only one TV. As the toy licensing, would the licensors approach a TV show? We can generate a little extra revenue by slapping Kojak on our existing toy guns, badges, handcuffs, etc. Remember, this is pre-Star Wars, so the studios didn't even think about licensing revenue. It was an afterthought or the icing on the cake. That all changed after Star Wars, where suddenly licensing was big money.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously, like we said, there was some Kojak licensing, but yeah, it wasn't a machine yet. I think Planet of the Apes kind of gave them an idea, but that was after the fact. Star Trek was after the fact. You know, after the movies, the Planet of the Apes movies come out, after Star Trek was in syndication, then they started saying, hey, this is generating some dollars here, you know, and then Star Wars just blew it up. Yeah, definitely. We heard from Ido Boznar, who said, oh, yeah, what a wonderful trip down the memory lane of 70s TV. Speaking of which, when you mentioned the Saturday night lineup of shows, I have to say that as far back as I can remember, MASH always aired on Monday nights. Didn't know it was originally slotted on Saturdays. And when Chris mentioned the Thursday night lineup with Magnum followed by Simon & Simon, a big smile came to my face. For a few years running in high school, that was probably my favorite night. I loved both of those shows so much. And they went together perfectly like peanut butter and chocolate. As for the power records in question, I have to ask, did anybody else notice that the radio station's call letters were WGBS? I was almost hoping the reporter would identify himself as Clark Kent.
I did not notice that.
I had it in my notes, but I forgot to mention it. So that, yeah. So
that's really, yeah. Yeah. Another crossover power records was never going to do. Rob McCarthy says, I wasn't allowed to watch it, but Hill Street Blues was a huge thing in my house because my uncle loved it and my dad did not. Steve Austin sounds like David Niven doing Lee Majors. As the wheelchair user of the late 70s, yep, we all wanted to be bionic.
Then we heard from Matt Saros, who said this episode was the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup of the Power Records podcast. Two great tastes that taste great together. Maybe we can get Steve Austin together with the Gemini Man for a 70s TV superhero episode. Sort of a sweet and sour episode. I don't know which one's the sour. My guess is why we never got a $6 million man cartoon is the licensing. The series was based on novels, and the studio probably didn't want to pay more for a cartoon or pay royalties. The Bionic Woman, however, could have been a cartoon since she was the original creation, but I'm betting they didn't think a cartoon with a female character would bring in ratings on Saturday mornings. Yeah, they were still hesitant to do that despite, you know, the success of characters like Isis and Web Woman and characters like that.
There is no way to prove that, but that seems very logical to me that would be the reason, right? Because, they were based on books, and that requires another level of payment. When Bionic Woman, they didn't have to do that. That really makes a lot of sense. Mike Thomas says, great episode, gentlemen. As a kid, I never really watched Kojak, but I was really into the $6 million Man and especially the Bigfoot episode. I hope you can cover that episode on some part of the network someday. I think the first meeting of Steve Austin and Bigfoot in the woods is one of the coolest scenes in 70s TV. I like the bionic sound effects and how they seem to play the bionic sound effect backwards when Steve falls or lands after jumping or being thrown by Bigfoot. Have you ever noticed that? I also enjoyed your prefatory remarks about TV lineups in the 70s. Tuesday night was always my favorite because I was into Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and Three's Company. As I recall, Mork and Mindy was on Thursday nights most of the time, and I watched that also. I was too young in the 70s for the classic adult sitcoms like the legendary Saturday night lineup of All in the Family, MASH, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, and Carol Burnett, but I got into all those shows later in reruns. And speaking of how so many 70s shows had Saturday morning cartoon versions, it would have been hilarious to see the Saturday morning cartoon version of Archie Bunker or Frank Burns. I'm half joking about that, but I could seriously imagine some MASH characters in a cartoon like maybe Klinger. Anyway, great discussion, guys, and I always enjoy Power Records every time you're on. Well, yes, not often enough, but thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. One thing worth mentioning, there was a quasi MASH cartoon. It ran very briefly. It was called Mush, and it was about Alaskan sled dogs. Yes, this is not a thing I'm making up. You can find it on YouTube, and it has all the characters are anthropomorphic dogs, and they have names that are versions of MASH characters. There's like a Henry Blake, there's a Radar, there's a Frank Burns. And they are kind of like, I mean, it's like, other than that, there's no connection to MASH. And you're like, why did they do this? But it absolutely does exist. Have you ever seen any of that, Chris?
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of it. And I think it was part of a Filmation anthology show, if I remember right. And I think I remember that was stripped when I was a kid. They showed it with the Groovy Ghoulies, like the Groovy Ghoulies and Friends, and there was like that, and occasionally you'd see that, but there was like Lassie and the Rescue Rangers and Gilligan's Island, the one where they're just on the island, not when they go to the planet. But I remember that like barely. But I once I saw a clip of it online, I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that. So I don't even think I knew it was based on MASH though.
I mean, it's so loose. I mean, I never knew it. Well, I never saw it when I was a kid. Somebody pointed it out to me after I started my MASH blog. They were like, did you know there was a animated MASH cartoon with anthropomorphic dogs? I'm like, what? Like, what? You know, and then I looked at it, I'm like, yeah, there it is. Before we move on to the next comment, I do want to ask you, Chris, Mike's talking about like classic TV lineups. That is something that, unfortunately, or maybe not, but everybody below a certain age, like your kid's age, they don't know about TV lineups because that's not a thing. No. You know, did you have a particular favorite lineup of TV? Like, was there one night that you were like, every show tonight is something I want to watch?
Well, the Tuesday night with Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley and stuff, that was a good one. And then I mentioned the Thursday night. But Friday nights at one time had the Incredible Hulk, had the Dukes of Hazzard and the Incredible Hulk on Friday night. So, I mean, good that stuff. Was like, oh, that was like that was my favorite night. You know,
right.
Friday night was it. And invariably, my mom would get groceries and I'd have to help, like, bring groceries in. And I was always, like, interrupted one or the other, you know. Oh, come on. You know, I don't know if the Dukes are going to make this jump, Mom. Come on. You know,
you might miss the 3 minutes that the Hulk shows up in the episode.
Exactly. I mean, I'm going to miss the change after I got over the change scaring the crap out of me. You know, but speaking of cartoons based on live action shows, Chuck Coletta writes in and says, The Barkleys was a short lived 1972 cartoon loosely based on All in the Family. NBC aired 13 episodes starring voices of Henry Corden and Joan Gerber. I believe it's available on DVD. So I had no idea. I know
that was news to me. Yeah.
I know they did. What's that? What was that show like in the 70s? Was like an adult cartoon. It's like Wait Till Your Father Gets Home.
Yeah. James Thurber, like based on James Thurber stories or something.
Yeah. And it had, I think Tom Bosley was the dad. Like,
yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Fernandez writes in to say, Bionic Elvis, dear Rob and Chris, you guys are the greatest. That portion where Mr. Chris started to sound like Elvis had me laughing and grinning for the rest of the podcast. I'm going to have to go back and listen to this episode. I don't really remember that, but okay. It's been so long. P.S. That Spidey meets Batman story is a legendary status encounter too. LOL. Oh yeah. My famous, Spider-Man's mad at me because of the Batman pen thing. Yeah. Still traumatized.
This is Chris Fernandez I'm talking to, not you, Chris. I will tell you, and this is for everybody listening, Chris Franklin's imitation of Lee Majors as $6 Million Man is legendary both within the network and without. And often in the Fire and Water Network thread, it comes up that we should try and work it more into podcasts. And in fact, when we mentioned to the rest of the guys that we were doing Power Records, Their vote was immediately more $6 Million Man, just so Chris would have a reason to break it out. And we were going to do that, and then we realized we hadn't done Plastic Man and Metamorpho, and we thought that's appropriate. But everyone is always asking for that invitation. It is just you're just constantly under demand for it. So you know, for all of you listening, as much as you love it, it's loved that much within the network as well.
Oh, thanks. Well, you know, Lee Majors is a fellow Kentuckian. So, you know, there you go.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, right. He is.
Okay. John Dredge says, this was a really funny podcast with the impressions. There you go. And anecdotes. I was a big Bionic Man fan and loved the Maskatron toy and the comic strip in Look In magazine. The UK was really Bionic obsessed back then. I enjoyed the Power Record complete with mind-bogglingly obvious sound effects, which really made me laugh. You could certainly tell when someone had opened a door. Sadly, we never got the Mr. T cartoon over here, but I will search for it on YouTube. Don't hurry, John. It's really not that big.
His dog has a mohawk. That's all
the
I'm
dog
say.
Has a mohawk. Yeah. Liz Ann Oswalt says, regarding the $6 million man story, it was, I was expecting a lot more from the title, The Berserker Cyborg. Something like that was going to be a greater story than it was. It was fine for what it was, but it could have been an alternate dimension Steve Austin. I think you're asking too much of Power Records, Liz Ann. a competing cyborg with a different name. It said we get the, You're special just the way you are story, sprinkled with a bit of where his cybernetics are out of control. Again, the Power Records were never going to go that far afield, so that's about as much as you could expect.
The show did the $7 million man, right? Was that Monty Markham? Was he the $7 million man on there, I think?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
Yeah, he was like the upgrade. He was like, you know, he was bad. So he was like, and I think his name was like, when it first aired, his name was Barney Miller. And when he came back, they had to name him Barney Hiller because Barney Miller had Hal Linden, Barney Miller had come on TV. So I think that it was kind of like, you know, when they unfortunately had to change the name of the greatest American hero briefly because his last name was Hinckley after the
oh, God. Yeah. Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Reagan. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez.
Lindsay L. Werner says, the thing that confuses me the most about the brat son / killer story, a killer in the second story, the Kojak story, is that he didn't try to milk the blackmail for all he could. Like, he had a specific goal, and it wasn't even just to be a layabout. He was to open his own firm, which is so different from everything else he was doing. And he specifically targets someone who wasn't just blackmailable, but shady as heck. Like, his dad wasn't a bastion of integrity either. He even commented on how much his client had hidden away. I also know I wasn't supposed to, but I really felt for the Fed. I couldn't help but think that Kojak just messed up a major RICO case. And he told Kojak who did it. Yeah, it wasn't the most professional he could have been, but clearly there was something bigger on the line. And I just get the sense he would have been willing to provide evidence for Kojak once his own case was wrapped up. I don't know. It just seemed like there was way more to this story. And if I kept going, we would have found out that Kojak really put his foot in it. Lindsay, are you a lawyer by any chance? she follows up with, I have heard from other people about the lack of geek / nerd girls, and it boggles the mind for me. My mom grew up a Trekkie with a crush on Yoda. She now adores baby Yoda, living her best life. Most of my friends were girls, and we all bonded over superheroes, anime, and sci-fi fantasy. No clue if this is an element or of different decades or if it's become some of the gender stuff as kids. I'm really curious if Cindy had a friend group like mine or if this is more of a time period shift. Chris, can you answer that?
I think poor Cindy was pretty alone in her geekdom, as far as I know. I don't think she had any friends that were particularly into that type of stuff, which is really sucks. Yeah.
So. I will tell you, one of the first things I learned about Kelly when we were getting together is that as a child, she had a poster of the Incredible Hulk on her wall. And that really endeared me to her.
Like, yeah, yeah.
She's a special little girl. Okay. She could have had Sean Cassidy or whatever, but no, she had the Incredible Hulk. And actually, flash forward for her 50th birthday, I got her a cameo from Lou Ferrigno wishing her a happy birthday. So,
oh, that's awesome.
It
that's
all
awesome.
Comes around.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mike Dinus writes in to say, to add my two cents to family night must watch TV, I don't remember too many nights where we all sat down as a family together to watch a specific program. It was mostly just what's on tonight and what is mom going to choose. later as my older brother got to choose, I remember having fights on whether we would watch Alf or MacGyver. The only time I can think of where it started to become tradition is Sunday nights. We would finish up dinner early so we could all sit down and watch The Wonderful World of Disney, followed by two Canadian shows, The Raccoons and The Beachcombers. Good times. With Chris's voice talents and Rob's artistry, have you guys considered making your own Power Records? Fire and Water Podcast Network presents a Fire and Water production of Fire and Water.
I don't think we want to visit from the Marvel or DC lawyers. I think that's right. Plus we're just lazy, but more the lawyers, right. I think.
I'm not saying we might not, you know, there might be some audio adventures down the line, who knows, mm-hmm. maybe, but as far as like producing the comic book, yeah, we're too lazy for that.
Yeah. And but by the way, Mike,
Rob's produced comic books, you know, he's produced award-winning comic books, so
well,
you know.
All right. So, okay. Yeah. I before we move on to the next comment, I do have to ask Mike, the show The Raccoons, please tell me that was a show about raccoons. right? Please. I want it to be about raccoons, not people. I hope that that's what it would do. And if I'm wrong, don't tell me. I'm just saying I want it to be. I like the idea that there was a Canadian show about a family of raccoons.
I hope it's real people just dressed as raccoons. You know, like in really kind of bad costumes, but they just wear them
super
all the
pup.
Time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bucky749 wrote in to say, I was born in 88, so Power Records was never a thing for me, but I enjoyed the show, and Kojak is a favorite as my dad is a police officer. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, my dad was a police officer before I was born. But yeah, so I saw him go into cop mode a few times growing up. It's kind of cool. So
Chris, I feel like I have never heard that. Have you ever? Yeah. You must have said that at some point. I have no recollection of that. Have you ever telling me that?
He was a policeman in the late 60s when he came out of the army. He was a policeman in the town here for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And he, you know, took a safer factory job because, you know, he had kids and my mom really didn't like him being a cop. So, I think he always kind of regretted it in a way, though, because I think he would have liked to have, like, gotten to FBI or something like that.
Wow. Jeez. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So, finally, Dallin at Baumgarten says, great show as always, gentlemen. Just loved it. The $6 million man record was fine, but I really enjoyed that Kojak yarn much more than I expected to. Some especially fun quips in that one. Steve Austin's dialogue, not so much. As a guitarist and a pasta lover, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have any trouble finding guitar string in a vat of spaghetti. Please don't take so long between episodes this time. sorry about that, Dallin. We had no intention of it being more than a year in between Power Record episodes. It just worked out that way. But I'm not going to promise. We do this every time where we say, hopefully we won't take so long next time. And then we do. So we're not going to promise anything. We're just going to, Chris and I will just, you know, try and talk amongst ourselves that when we have a spare week on the Fire and Water Network, we'll think to do one of these. So, but we do apologize. It took so long in between episodes.
Well, and we could have done Metamorpho next year when James Gunn's Superman film comes out to tie into it, but we just did it. So
yeah. Maybe if the $6 million man gets rebooted, we can tie it in or whatever. So
I want it to get rebooted based on every version I've ever heard that it's possibly going to be. It's like,
Leave it alone. It's fine. Just leave it the way it is. So, well, anyway, thanks everybody for the comments. And of course, big thanks to our pal Max Romero for coming by and talking Plastic Man and Metamorpho with us. We would not have done it any other way. Of course, we have to thank our Patreon sponsors. Of course, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, you can just go to patreon.com/FW podcasts, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on the show of your choice. So we have to thank Gord Tolton and David Gutierrez, plus
David Branning,
for their support of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. We really do appreciate it. So again, like we just said, we're not going to promise when the next episode will be. We will just do our best, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the show. Leave comments and the feedback, and we promise we'll cover them in the next episode. So that's going to do it. So until next time, drop the needle
and turn the page.
Come, Robin, into the Batmobile and home.